Hey, it's Christine from Storyworthy. Today on the show, comedian James Veitch talks about how he scams the scammer.
I got an email from a really good friend of mine, a girl called Alex. They said, thanks for your response. I need $2,000 to pay hotel bills. Let me know what you can come up with. I realized that obviously it was a scam. I could just ignore the email or delete it or whatever. But I was something, I don't know why, but in the morning, I just thought, well, why not? And I said, Alex, but how on earth did this happen? And the game was afoot. I thought I just need to up the stakes. So I said, Alex, before I do this, and I want to, before I do this, tell me one thing. How was I as a lover?
Today on the show, comedian James Veitch talks about how he scams the scammer. Stay close.
Hey, it's James Veitch, and you're listening. What was it called? Story worthy.
Welcome to Storyworthy. My name is Christine Blackburn, and I'm coming to you from Los Angeles, California. Whether you're a longtime fan of the show of almost 10 years, ladies and gentlemen, it'll be 10 years in July, or you're a new listener, welcome to the show. I hope you guys enjoyed the show last week with comedian April Macy. Do you know April Macy, James?
I do not know, but obviously I should do.
Well, honestly, though, she is an internationally known comedian, and she's just super funny.
Yeah, but my agent tells me that I'm an internationally, and apparently that's not the case either. You just called me James Veitch, so, I mean, who knows?
James Veitch. Listen, your last name is tricky. You have to admit that.
Yeah, it's really tricky. Yeah, I mean, my agent says he's getting the word out, but apparently that's not the case.
It is the case because I know you now. But listen, you guys, the point is, April Macy, super funny girl. She talks all about the travel ban and how her husband, she got married over in Santorini, Greece, and they plan to come back to the States, right? No, they wouldn't let her husband in the country because he has an Iranian passport. Anyway, it's a great show. Go back and listen to it. James, you look confused, but you won't be.
No, I was.
If you listen to the episode.
I intend to.
Anyway, you guys, I'm super excited today to have a really interesting guest with me, James Veitch. And I have to tell you, this is one of the reasons why this whole isolation thing and being in quarantine has all of a sudden opened up new worlds for me, because before this all started, I had never done any remote podcasting, any. Everybody was always right in front of me or in studio. And here I am talking to somebody across the pond. And James, I have to tell you, I've been watching so much of your content, and you are a funny dude.
Thank you very much. That's very kind of you to say.
Yeah, and I'm very excited for your new book coming out called .con, mm-hmm. Which I have to say, what a clever title. I don't believe nobody ever came up with that before. I mean, I've never heard it before.
I think my friend Max came up with it. I can't remember what other ones were in the offing, but they were not strong. Scammable, Scam Nation, I can't remember. Yeah. But .con seems good, yeah, with an N, you know?
Really good, .con. I'm so excited to hear it. And your videos, I got to tell you, James, it's really impressive because you're doing something that's, I mean, yes, it's comedy, but there's another layer to it of, seriously, man, it's like, it's kind of brilliant in a way. I mean, you're hitting on topics that everybody can relate to, no matter.
Yeah, unfortunately, you peel away the layers, there's nothing there. It's just layers, you know? It's, if you go too far with the onion, there's no dinner, you know? There's nothing
else. You are so British. Let me ask you a few things about England right now. First of all,
yes, I can tell you everything.
What city are you in?
I'm in London. I'm in North London currently.
Okay.
Very beautiful.
Okay. Is today actually beautiful, or is it cold and rainy?
It's lovely. We've had some glorious weather. I put a hammock app up on my kind of terrace, and I just lay there for a little bit. Although I don't, I a couple of weeks ago, I put the hammock up, and then it was too sunny, and I was like, oh, that's just too much sun. And then I got, I got what is apparently called a sun sail, which sounds very sophisticated for what is essentially just a piece of tarpaulin that you kind of put up. And then I was like, oh, I've got no breeze. So then I brought a fan outside. I just don't stand out. At what point should I just go inside? Because at what point am I not just bringing all the things that are inside outside? I think it's better just to be out inside.
Yeah. No, I know what you're saying. That reminds me, That reminds me of here in California, every January 1st, they have a big football game called the Rose Bowl. And it's in the Rose Bowl in Pasadena, California. It's very beautiful. It's mm-hmm. always sunny, perfect weather. But you can go over there and you could look at the floats. And it's really pretty. It's amazing. It's stunning. It's beautiful. But in addition, there are people there in these RVs. And they've been camped out for like 4, 5, mm-hmm. 6 days a week waiting for the football game. But what the funny part is they like bring... Honestly, they bring like living room furniture, rugs, there's TVs outside, and they're outside this big camper. So it's just like you said, it's like at what point, why are you even in the camper? Or why did you leave?
It's delightful though to have things that are meant to be inside, outside. Just like it's delightful if you've been on, you know, a posh boat, you know, one of those liners and someone's got basically a living room and it's a bit pokey, but it's like, wow, it's floating,
yeah.
You know? Anything displaced is cute, but I agree. That's called tailgating, isn't it? Is that what tailgating
that's
is?
That's right. It's called tailgating. Good on you. Now, you did go to school here at Sarah Lawrence.
Yes. You get to, oh, yeah, I did. Yeah, briefly. Yeah.
Did
for
you?
A couple of years.
Okay. So you didn't graduate from there?
No, I did a postgrad. I did graduate. That just, when I said briefly, yeah, that did sound very much like, yeah, I was there briefly. that did sound like, yeah, that's the right interpretation.
Okay, so how did you like America? What do you think of us over here? Besides the Donald Trump point, like, how do you find America?
I like you guys, you know, sugarcoat it. Listen, I enjoy it. I like Americans. I feel it's a bit frightening over there at the moment. But I've always liked America. That's why I went over there. I felt like the reason I went to Sarah Lawrence is because I wanted to sort of untether my intellect. And it's a great place to do that because they don't, you know, you don't get grades at Sarah Lawrence. You get like an interpretive dance, you know, you did blue. It was like their kind of, so this is a good place. But that's where I first started doing stand-up as well. So I like America. I like it a lot. I've been to many different states that I hadn't been to before. And it's always, also for me, I mean, this is the way America is going to win whatever culture wars there are. It's because they just make all the movies. And so when I was growing up as a child, I would just, and then I go to America and it feels like a movie. Everything down, you know, all the little things that I never knew about, Keds, Tube Socks. I mean, that's just that one song, but you know what I mean? Walking around America, you know, New York with the yellow taxis, that feels like a movie. In fact, I was walking with a girlfriend once. I was walking past in New York and I went by, I said, oh, that looks like the fire station from Ghostbusters. And she said, I mean, it is. And I was like, wow, okay. That was a very confusing moment for us.
Have you been to California?
Yeah, I've been to California. Wear a flower in your hair when you go there and be dreaming.
I've heard that.
I love it. It's beautiful.
It never rains in Southern California. I don't know if you've heard that.
Yeah, that's not a good thing on the whole. I recently had a breakup about 3-4 years ago, and I drove all the way, it wasn't that far, but from Los Angeles to San Francisco, and that was wonderful in an open top, you know, car, feeling like a leisure. Obviously I got sunstroke by the end, it wasn't quite as dramatic, but it felt cool.
Oh yeah, man. That's a lovely drive. No doubt about it. It's always beautiful. I mean, I've lived here for 22 years, but it's still, every time I hit like PCH, it's just like put the windows down and crank up the Tom Petty. And it is, it is like being in a movie.
I did that. Yeah. It is. It feels, you're perilously close to the ocean. You can't help wondering whether when they built the road, it wasn't that far, that close to the ocean. And, you know, it's almost as if you can just put the word earthquake out of your mind for a little while you're driving up there. You can just not think about it.
I know, it's true.
Don't even think about it.
But it is true. There's something very stereotypical about America. Next time you come out here, I'm going to show you some things in Los Angeles because I think I could.
That sounds terrifying. I'll show you some things in Los Angeles.
I'll take you down.
I'll take you downtown. Yeah.
Listen, I am just so thrilled to meet you. Some of your YouTube stuff is just fabulous. And what I really like about your YouTube stuff, Veach, is I called you Veach.
That's right. Everybody does.
What I love about your YouTube stuff, James, is that you keep it very current. You keep it very light. My daughter has watched a lot of your stuff, and we both just laugh so hard. Do you know the comedian Nathan Fielder?
No, stop naming comedians. I don't know.
He had a show called Nathan For You.
Oh, yes, I do. Yes, I love that show. That's a great show.
And this is what I equate you to, as it were. It's just, it's smart, it's intelligent, it's funny, it's self-deprecating. Mm. Your humor is just spot on. I'm very curious that you started here in America rather than England, because you guys have a huge stand-up scene over there. At least you did in the 80s and 90s.
Yeah. We do, we still do. It's great. It's just I never had the confidence to do it until I went to America. And I think in America, first of all, that there was a kind of pass they gave you. Well, first of all, I was somewhere new, and I was at Sarah Lawrence, which actually, you know, did genuinely promote trying new things, which is great. And so I did, and also, and I tried it. Because everybody was just wanting you to succeed there, or a lot of people were, and that was good. And also, when I started doing stand up, you could get away with a little bit because you're English, so ears would prick up. And then if you could be a little bit kind of, I don't know, Hugh Granty, like disheveled and stuff, and you could do some jokes that would kind of, I don't know, I found I could sort of maybe be like more of a character, which helped me get into stand up there. So I just didn't have any confidence until I went to. And I went there. One of the reasons I went there was because I knew they did a stand-up course.
Wow, that is...
And I really wanted to do it.
That's really interesting. Most people do have, though, most comedians, and I know quite a few comedians, and I've had so many here on the show, most of them do have, like, there is some one specific thing that kind of pushed them onto the stage. It's like there's an epiphany.
Childhood trauma.
It usually is childhood. Of course, yeah, that's almost always true. But for you, it's interesting that you felt like with a different audience, or at least, like, people you don't know. And then, like you said, you're already English, so you got the leg up with the accent and everything. And people think you could say shit, and because of your accent, they think that you're, you know, saying something worthy.
It's an oldie English word. Yeah. It was more like, yeah. I mean, it was just a lot of things. If you go somewhere new, you can be a different person. You know that feeling when you go and you're like, I can be any, you know, I can. And so I went there and I was someone who... I tried to believe in myself, believe that I was funny. And it took me a long, long time to think that I was funny. Even though I always wanted to be a comedian, but it took me a long time to work up the courage to do it.
Do you have brothers and sisters?
I've got a little sister.
And that's it? Just the two of you?
Just the two of us.
Interesting. Interesting. Your parents are there in London?
My mom is in sort of divided time between London and Oxfordshire, and my dad is just outside London.
Oh, nice. Okay. They must be very proud of you, yeah?
Yeah, I think, I think so. It's hard to tell. You know, my mom says stuff like, you know, I'll be like, oh, I've got to, I'll be saying, oh, I've got a tour coming up. And she'll be like, okay, have you written any jokes, James? I was like, okay, yeah, I mean, yeah, one or two. You have to be funny. Yep, that is the name of the game. So now what I do is I just say, oh my God, yeah, really? Oh God, I haven't written any jokes. Yeah. Have you got any ideas?
I better start thinking. Yeah, this is something I should think about this. That's funny.
It's the only way to combat it.
Dude, listen, you have played in halls that look like there's 5,000 people there. Is that true?
Probably. I did a tour with Conan and there were some quite big places there.
Yeah.
That was fun.
And then at the Melbourne Comedy Festival as well, right?
Big venues there. It's been great. Yeah. I really enjoy it.
How did you hook up with Conan? Did your publicist help you with that, or?
I can't remember. I think I just got a call, and I answered it, and he just said there was just this. it just get in the car, and I came out, and there was this great big orange Buick, and I was just like, all right, fair enough. And then it just carted me off, and suddenly I was there.
I'm so happy for you, really. And you know, guys like Conan, they always do go for a little bit of offbeat, cheeky comedy that is a little smarter than the rest. And that's you.
Ah, thank you.
So it makes sense. All right, you guys, we're going to get to James' story in just a second, but I did want to remind you that I have said it before, but I've only said it like twice before, because I just started another show. It's called The Storyworthy Hour of Power, and it's every Sunday night at 6 p.m., and it's on Zoom, so you can watch anywhere in the world. Tickets are available on Brown Paper Tickets. The guests I've already had, you guys, I've had Kathy Ladman, Ed Krasnick, Abby Schachner. David Krabs, some fabulous talent. So you guys check out the Story Worthy Hour of Power. It's me and four other storytellers in 1 hour of tight comedy, tight storytelling. Screw the networks.
It's tight.
It's tight. Screw the networks. We have Zoom, folks. We have Zoom. So that's it. I'm doing my own show. That's it. Bottom line. So check out more information at storyworthypodcast.com. All right, you guys, he's here right now. James Veitch. Like I said, I just discovered this guy a few weeks ago, and I'm so happy I did because I've just flown through his catalog of content, and I'm super excited to read his book as well. I just ordered it.
It's a good opportunity to say the word oeuvre. I think you should say, you know, you rarely get to say oeuvre these days.
Wait, what does oeuvre mean?
Oeuvre is like someone's entire catalog, someone's entire like work, their whole opus of stuff, you know,
their catalog.
Yeah, I think it's a French word. I think it means open. I think, or maybe I'm wrong.
Well, spell it. I'm going to write it down.
Oeuvre.
Ouvre.
No, it's got an O. I think it's one of those weird ones. I think it's an O U E. Hang on.
That's a cheese.
O U. No, I don't think it is. Yeah, O E U V R E.
Okay, so we're learning new words as well, you guys. Yeah, anyway,
I'll take a slice of ouvre and some gouda. I think you're thinking gouda.
I have a touch of the gouda, but I'm feeling better. James is just hilarious, and check this out. He is responsible for the fastest ever TED Talk to reach over 10 million views. 10 million views. That is incredible. Were you shocked?
Yeah, that was. Yes. I wasn't shocked by the time it got to 10 million because it started off very, very quickly. I was shocked by the time it got to 1 million.
Wow.
And then it was just like, okay, this is obviously taken off quite a lot.
Well, it's just it's a fabulous special. Anyway, you guys can follow James over at his website, veitch.me, and also on Twitter at veitchtweets. All right, you guys, wherever you are, put your hands together for James Veitch.
Okay, good. Okay. All right. My story is I'm going to tell. I mean, this is, you've seen the TED Talk, so but I can take you to the end of the story, which I really haven't done before apart from in my show. So basically, I got an email from a really good friend of mine, a girl called Alex. I woke up in the morning, I got that email, and it said, hi, sorry to bother you this time, but I made a quick trip out of this week to London, UK, and I had my bag stolen from me. The embassy is willing to help by letting me fly without my passport. I just had to pay for a ticket and sell hotel bills. And it was quite early in the morning. I wasn't quite as savvy about this sort of thing as I am now. So I was like, what? But the moment I sent that, I realized that obviously it was a scam. It was a friend of mine. Her email account had been hacked into. What happened is they'd hacked into her account. They had reset her password so she can get back in. And then they just sent everyone in her address book this email. And, they said, thanks for your response. I need $2,000 to pay hotel bills. Let me know what you can come up with. And I thought about it. And I thought, well, I could do, I mean, there are two ways I could play this. The first is I could just ignore the email or delete it or whatever. But I was something, I don't know why, but in the morning, I just thought, well, why not? And I said, Alex, but how on earth did this happen? And the game was afoot. I said, I had no idea you were even in London. And $2,000 on hotel bills, you could have stayed at mine for free. I'm working on getting you the cash. Okay. And then she said, thanks a lot. I promise to pay back. And she said, here are the details you need in sending the funds via Western Union. It's always Western Union. I came to realize. And I said, to be honest, I'm a bit annoyed you spent the past week in the lap of luxury and haven't contacted me at all. I thought we were close. What happened? And this is where it got really funny, because obviously the scammer thinks that I think I'm talking to my best mate. And so the scammer has to pretend to be my best, not knowing anything about relationship. I said, don't be pleased. You know, my head was filled and I was a bit confused, but now you promised my help to help. My mind is at rest. Can't you be able to get the funds by today? I really need to get on the next a viable flight. So I knew I was dealing with a professional, and I thought about it, and I thought I just need to up the stakes. So I said, Alex, before I do this, and I want to, before I do this, tell me one thing. How was I as a lover? I've been wanting to know this ages, but I haven't ever had the courage to ask. You know, you do want to know those sort of things, you know, after a lot of time has passed. And she said, James, don't start. I'm in a mess right now. My head aches. Please just get me out of this mess. I said, if that's the way you're going to behave, maybe you could just dig yourself out of this mess. Remember Tuscany? I don't. I've never been. Those huge waves? I mean, to be fair, they would have to be, is inland. Tell me you still love me. Okay, James, I still remember the old times we spent together. And I wish, really, how do you? And I wish we could do it once more. We had the chance to. I will never get the good times. Just get me out of this mess. And I said, but do you love me? And they said, yes, I do love you, Jen, which is great. I like that for two reasons. Because first of all, I'm single. And sometimes it's just nice to hear the words. It's just nice to know that someone, you know, no matter who, albeit someone. And then, and also, if you think about it, somewhere in Nigeria, there is a man telling me he loves me, which I think is just makes the world just seem so wonderful, you know? I do love you, Jane. And I will meet you at the airport once all this is clear. Love you. And I said, prove it. And I said, how? And I said, write me a poem. I didn't know what I was just thought it'd be quite, you know, nothing large, just a simple one, just to me, something about Tuscany. It would mean a lot to me. How safe is Western Union? I said, Western Union's 100% safe. And the poem? I said, I will write the poem. It's not a problem. Said, why the fun so we can meet? I said, I'm not doing anything until I get a poem. And that, I said, fine, no problem. I can see what I've been matters. Thanks for your time. And that was the end of that. That was the, I said, we'll always have Tuscany. And that basically got me down on this kind of path of just starting emailing as many scammers as I could, because I just thought that I had such a great day doing that. And I get a lot of them. So I just started emailing lots. I just started replying to as many of these guys as I could.
Now, did you turn, let me ask you, did you turn your spam filter off like purposefully?
No, what I did is I set up a couple of different email addresses. And then what I did is I went into my spam folder and then copied and pasted the reply to email addresses and then replied from the fake email addresses that I'd got.
Smart.
So I didn't turn, because, you know, I mean, that'd be a bad idea. It's I just had so much fun doing it. I just started replying to all these people, and that's kind of taken me down this kind of crazy path where, and I started, then I got a book out of it. I basically got one published by the New York Times, which is great, and a book and a show. And I was doing regular stand-up at the time. Just, you know, vanilla stand-up. And that, but then I realized that I could kind of, it was really fun to tell the story. And I thought, well, it'd be good if I could project it. And I was quite good on, you know, with my computer. So I started to bring around a projector and a screen. And then I realized that I could kind of tell two different stories. So I could say, like, there's a power in not saying things. So I would say, how was I? And then I'd do the clicker, and the clicker would say, as a lover, and I wouldn't have to say that. And I could just kind of react. I could just react to it, and the audience could look at it. And it was, and I could get sometimes, you know, I could get two laughs at the price of one, but also I could, it was just a different way. It was like, it was playing with the kind of the things that we're reading and the things that we're thinking or having said to us as well.
Yeah. It's like the rhythm of the joke. So you're getting it on different levels. You're getting it from your voice. Mm-hmm. You're getting it from what's amplified onto the screen and the absurdity of it. Now, these conversations, like that first one you said, that sounds like about 16 or 18 emails back and forth.
Mm. Is that? That was one day. That was one day.
All day long.
Just one day. I just, you know, send a different email back. I mean, occasionally I'd have ones that would go on for weeks, and it was just, you know,
weeks.
And to be honest, because also by the end of it, to be honest, a lot of these guys, I think they're getting savvy now to this sort of thing. They know people just, you know, playing with them. So now if I want to do it, I have to spend quite a lot of time sort of getting them on the hook, so to speak, you know, kind of, you know, just teasing them until they're ready. That one, obviously, they are Alex. It had to be done quickly,
yeah,
because Alex, there was no way she could keep up this ruse. So that there was a reason for that. Well, as often it's just, I got an email, for instance, from Oxfam. I was just replying to it. Oxfam is a charity, mm-hmm. A charity giving away money to,
like, Red Cross or something, or
yeah, uh-huh. Yeah. Exactly like that. And so I got an email. Your email account was picked at the ongoing Oxfam organization Community Relief Funds in partnership with, in brackets, WHO, to battle poverty and COVID-19 pandemic crisis in your region. You, among 20 lucky ones, have benefit the sum of 1 million euros. For more details, contact this person. So I got in touch and I said... I said, I'm glad someone's doing something. How can I help? And then they got back in touch and they said, okay, it's a donation promoted by Oxfam United Kingdom in conjunction with the World Health Organization. Your email address was picked by an automated random draw. Obviously, I put my email into random draws. I said, thanks for your email. I'm very excited to help in the fight against the pandemic, but I feel very reticent to pass details to you over the internet. My grandchildren have told me this is dangerous. Can you help? Anyway, blah, blah, blah. Okay. So then they asked for my info, like my full name, address, etc. So I gave them some details of someone else I just made up. And I said, because they want me to help with COVID, I said, I can do this. And I said, I believe I can use the funds to build a community area where we can share important information on the COVID crisis. I also believe we could potentially buy in ventilators because the NHS seems to be having a problem making them. My wife has been fashioning masks out of cloth, and I think that we could potentially outsource this to help the health service. Would this be acceptable to you? And so they said, that's fine, blah, blah, blah. And I said, okay, how quickly can I begin work on the ideas I have in mind? I'd like to set up an information center close by where people can come together and really get close and work out how best to deal with the issues that COVID-19 has raised. Do you think we'll be possible to put some of the money into coming up with a vaccine? And I said, yes, blah, 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 we have more of that, etc. Okay, can I use some of the money for vaccine research? Because they ignored me for quite a while. Anyway, they said, yes. And I said, okay, what are the goals of Oxfam I must accomplish? Would it be foolish to try and find the vaccine myself? I have no experience, but I have attended a number of doctor's appointments, and it seems feasible that something must have rubbed off. Let me have some more. Okay. And then, so they said, that's fine. Oxfam choose winners to support their society. As you have stated on the previous email, I guess that's what Oxfam would like you to do. Reach other to the poor once around you in this hard time. Okay, I said, here are my first ideas, and bear in mind the details aren't fully worked out yet. The first part of the money I want to use to build a space where the community can gather. Inside this enclosed space, we'll be able to discuss at close quarters the COVID-19 problem. I'll hold a special meeting and put on a buffet of finger foods. Perhaps we could even put the Oxfam logo up. Would you be okay with this? It's a mixer, essentially. We'll also have another place so people can bring items they're not using home and offer them to others. Then using the other half, I want to set up a research facility in my basement. I know what you're thinking. Do I really think I can come up with a cure? Well, let me tell you that when I was a young boy, I contracted chicken pox. To fight it off, I drank a thimble full of vinegar and chased it down with a Watsit. That's a type of crisp over here. And let me tell you something. I've never contracted chicken pox again. Draw your own conclusions. So,
and then you just send it back.
Yeah. So now I'm just emailing. Yeah, because they've got me in touch with the bank. So now I'm kind of trying to play it cool.
Yeah.
A little bit, just to kind of make them, get them on the hook again, and then I'll go in hard and fast about the vaccine. I think he should help with the vaccine. You know,
that's the least he can do. Now, when does the ruse usually end? Like, it just ends cold, or do they say like fuck off, or you know?
They sometimes say that. I mean, some things for every one of these that I get that's in the book or that I've performed, there are about 10 that didn't make the cut. Like I've emailed lots and lots of people, and what happened is either their email account will be stopped by the provider, you know, they'll be get reported, or they'll realize it's spam and they'll just cancel it. My emails get bounced back, or I get rumbled, you know, they just aren't, they kind of know what I'm doing. But that's rare, because they kind of want to believe, just like the people they're scamming want to believe. It's kind of funny. There's a little dance going on.
Okay. So have you ever really been scammed before all this? Have you ever gotten scammed?
I'm sure I have, in the sense that, like, you know, I don't know if you've ever been on holiday, vacation, if you've ever been on holiday and you've, you know, you walked into a tourist trap or something, you know, just, you know, what, you just know that they're not, that you're being ripped off in some sort of capacity. There's that kind of feeling. I had a thing happen to me a while ago where a guy came, and I was selling a phone, because I bought a new phone and I was selling my old one. And a guy came round, and I was also, at the time, I was on the phone to a company making a complaint about something, and it had taken me forever to get that far, to get to that tier of complaints person. And so I was dealing with this guy who was counting out £20 notes onto the counter, and I was just kind of, and he paid me, and I was just going, and then he left. And basically within about, I would say 2 minutes of him leaving, I kind of took a closer look at the notes and saw that they were clearly, I mean, the Queen looked like a womble. It was ridiculous. It was, you know, and I was just, this is not, and then I realized that a lot of the serial numbers were just the same. And I was so upset because I just felt emasculated, I suppose. I felt, because I should have seen that, you know. It's an awful feeling. It's an awful feeling when you kind of put stuff together and, you know, it all kind of makes sense.
You know, it happens so frequently when you are traveling because obviously you're in a different place and a different, you know, everything is new to you. And it is so upsetting to get ripped off because, like, when people come to America, like, I am, like, the first person to try to, like, be an ambassador, as it were, like, I want you to have a good time. Like,
no one gets ripped off in America.
Well, that's not true, but I'm just saying,
right.
Like,
no, New York, it's actually famous for no one ever getting ripped off.
Like, I like to, I don't know, like, I like to change the stereotype or whatever. And I always want to believe the best in people because I'm a good person or whatever. Now, that being said, I have traveled extensively because I was a flight attendant. So I was in Istanbul, this is just like 3 years ago I was a flight attendant years ago. I'm just saying that's why I've
With what airline?
It was with US Air. And I used to come to England all the time. We flew into Gatwick. Then it turned to US Airways and now I think it's gone. But the point is, just a few years ago, I was in Istanbul and, you know, in the guidebook, it says only get a car or a taxi from a stand. Only get a car or taxi from a stand. In other words, don't just let somebody flag you down and give you a ride. But we had been walking all day and it was super crowded and it was super hot. And we come out of this spice market and everybody's real close together. And it's just, you just got to breathe. And we just wanted to get to the hotel. So we flagged down the car. Boom. Number one mistake, you know, right off the bat, big mistake. We get in this car. What the fuck are we doing? You know, like right off the bat, I'm so mad at myself because as soon as we get in, we knew it was a mistake. The guy starts flying like 90 miles an hour. He doesn't go across the bridge he's supposed to go across. He takes this other way, of course, goes round and round. When he pulls up in front of our hotel, he won't pull up in front of the hotel. He won't go to the valet because they know then that the valet, you know, they could have a camera at the hotel or whatever. So he passes the hotel. And then we're like, hey, the hotel's back there. And he's like, no, got to get out. So now we're going to hand him money. And here comes the big switch, right? So this is where the whole scam goes down. And it was very upsetting because we give him the money. Then, he's in the front seat and he does something on the seat, comes back and he picks up the note and he goes, this is counterfeit. This isn't real money. Because, of course, he has that on the seat beside. And it was this big thing. And it's like...
Did you say to him, did you know that he knew that you know? Because there's a thing.
Yes. And it was...
You're like, obviously, you're just doing a scam.
Except the point is, he kind of has us, unless we just try to jump out of the car. I mean, it was just a really ugly moment. And we let him get away with it. And it was just maybe $40 that he scammed over us. But we were both, like, so bummed. It kind of ruined the day. Because it was like... I'm not saying it was my fault and it wasn't my friend's fault, but yet it was our fault because we read in the guidebook, don't go to any car unless it's in at a stand. And in Istanbul, this is like the number one problem. This isn't even like down low. So we disregarded the warning because we thought it was just late and we're tired and he seems nice enough, you know, so we fucked up.
So hang on, what are you annoyed about? Because you're saying a bunch
I'm
of things.
I'm annoyed
there.
Because you're annoyed that you... Because he was driving too fast. He clearly wasn't like registered.
No. Yeah. But, and also scammed you. But are you annoyed with yourself for not taking the advice or are you annoyed with the scam happened?
All of it. It pisses me off. No. It just makes me angry.
Yeah. I can tell. Thinking about it pisses me off that you hearing that story because, in other words,
when I was younger or like in college, I remember getting scammed by this like cruise ship. These people called and they said, oh no, this trip, it's like $100 or whatever. You got to come. And I'm like, cause I'm like 22. I'm like, I need to speak with your manager. And so they pull over like another kid and he goes, oh no, I'm the manager. And then I go, this doesn't sound true. And he goes, oh, it's true. And I say, okay, here's my money. And then, you know, but I was a kid. And then another time I got like scammed. There was another thing that happened. But my point is now in my 40s, now I'm in my 50s, but in my 40s, like I shouldn't be getting scammed anymore. I think that's what I'm saying.
I don't know what happens. And he knew that you knew that that was a scam, that he had done something to the money, that the money you handed over, because he probably got that from a travel agency. Like, that money is not fake. And he knows that you know that. But the point is, he's got you in a position. That's not necessarily, I don't think that's even qualifies as a scam. That's just him basically robbing you.
Oh,
because, I mean, he's making it sound like a scam, but you knew that that was not the case. And you were like, okay, well, you're obviously threatening us, essentially. So here is the, what I think is a scam is when you are hoodwinked into believing, because when you gave him the money, you didn't believe, I assume, that the...
Yeah, that's right. We knew at the time this is wrong, but we just wanted to get the fuck
out. So it's basically just
that's someone wow,
threatening you. And I think that's different. There is a feeling, though, when you've had the wool pulled over your eyes, that it's that is horrible. But yeah, that annoys me as well. And the thing is, a lot of vulnerable adults, what the people they prey on often are... people who are, I hear a lot of stories of people, I don't want to generalize, but from people who's their octogenarian grandfather.
Yeah, they're seniors, they're alone.
Away a lot of money. But also, yeah, and they feel like that they don't have that kind of power, that they used to be an important part of the world going around, and they had important jobs, and they were, you know, but now there's nothing. So to have this little business, have your fingers in a few pots of money and be able to kind of have that to yourself is kind of a nice feeling. And it's very hard because these people want to keep it to themselves, but they also scam children. I spoke to someone who said that her son, her friends, basically her son's friend, apparently his family said he just stopped eating and he was looking just like he had a cloud over his head. And they finally got out of him. And they only got it out of him because he told their son that he was going to leave, that he was like, oh, I'm leaving home, by the way, just that, you know, you won't see me around these parts. He's like 10, you know, I'm leaving home. And they were like, and so the kid told his parents, and the parents phoned their parents. And eventually they got it out of the kid that basically he received an email about basically money that this email said, you have spent a lot, like you owe $10,000 in money for Minecraft mods or things like that. So something that he'd done, online gaming.
Yeah.
And your family, we're going to contact your family, and your family are going to be in debt for this. And he was like, he thought, well, that's it. You know, I've only had 10
so
years,
sad.
But life's over now. So I'm just going to leave. I'm going to leave, you know, and kept it to himself. Awful, absolutely awful. And imagine how heavy that would weigh on you. I mean, I must admit, I do like the idea. I find it quite sweet, the idea of him going, well, that's it. I'm out of here. I've brought shame upon my family, age 10 years old, and it's time to start a new life.
Aww, what a
you know,
sweetheart.
Like going up with like a little handkerchief on his, on it, you know, shoulder. But yeah, horrifying.
Well,
so,
you know, and it, you know, I have a daughter, she's 13, and I'm always trying to keep her like a little bit streetwise, you know, like, I mean, we're here.
Oh, wow. They love it when their parents do that. What do you say? Do you use words like wicked and stuff like that?
I say, Alabama, listen, if an adult asks you for directions, get the hell out of there, because there's no reason for an adult to ever ask a child for directions. That should never happen. So like that to me is a warning. If somebody yells out their window, where is something? Get out. Because there's no way they should be asking a kid. Is that true or false?
I just thinking about it. Yes. It's not like we live in that kind of old towny, hey, kid, where's Main Street? You know, we're not, you know, but I just did have this image of her at school. You know, someone who's visiting the school, maybe a new teacher, says, sorry, do you know, where's the staff room? And she just runs.
Get the fuck out.
Yeah. Yeah, well, stranger danger. You're like, I'm a teacher. But yeah, that's cool. Yeah.
You know, and then especially like you said, for seniors, you know, that makes me so sad. My mom's like 84, and to think that somebody would call her and try to pull her along, it's just depressing for several reasons, you know, and I guess it just can happen at any time in our lives. We just have to, I don't know, what's the message? I mean, do you leave us with any words of hope at the end of .con?
I can't remember. Yeah. I'll tell you what. I'll tell you why my book is, why everyone should buy this book, is because it's by reading it, it's funny, but it also, you just learn how they go.
Yeah.
like all the words they use, all the techniques they use, all the spelling errors, all the Western Union. If anyone wants to be paid by Western Union, that is a massive alarm. Yeah. I'm not saying they're not legitimate business, but most, it's untraceable. So if anybody wants to be paid by that.
Oh, is that what it is? I didn't realize that. It's untraceable.
It's untraceable. And so the consignment boxes, you know, capital letters, all those sorts of things. I mean, I had one thing happen to me there was this guy who had been, I'd been scammed, or was talking to, there was a scammer who I'd been communicating with quite a lot because he'd just been a part of a lot of these scams called Solomon O'Donker. And I sent him, an email because actually at the time I thought it'd be nice to know what it was like to be a scammer. Because I didn't know that. I thought I knew what it was like to get scammed, etc. So I sent him an email. I said, Solomon, I expect you've sussed out that I've known from the start that you're a scammer. And you know that I know that you know. So I was wondering whether you'd be willing to do an interview with me about what it's like to be a scammer. And he obviously didn't know because the email I got back said this. He said, I cannot believe I've been wasting my precious airtime with a madman like you. What a waste is this? You are a total disgrace to manhood. Go fuck yourself. And that was that. You were a total disgrace to manhood. Go fuck yourself. Now, on the back of the book, on the paperback, I had these, we had these quotations, and it was like The Guardian, relentlessly funny or something. The Independent, brilliant. You know, The New York Times, I laughed my ass off. Solomon O'Donker, you are a total disgrace to manhood. Go fuck yourself. And I really like the fact that he was quoted. You know,
Solomon O'Donker. Where was Solomon saying he was from? Nigeria?
I don't know. I don't know if we ever got to that. Really? Oh. He became a... I like the name, but he became like a kind of a staple. I've said his name so many times. Because technically I only wrote half this book. You know, it was mostly
letters.
So it's the scammers. So the publishing, they were like, the publishers were like, they're not. I was like, they're not going to try and claim royalties. Don't worry. They're not going to come forward.
I think what's a great part about your book is it's a fun book to read aloud with friends and family because it just gets more and more ridiculous. And it's just so funny. Boy, I got to tell you, James, you are seriously, you're like pushing boundaries. You're breaking molds. You're coming up with a new spin on something that we've all experienced, but nobody really ever talked about it. So congratulations on like just being so clever. It's very smart.
Oh, that's very sweet. That's very kind of you to say. I have to listen back to the other episodes now to see whether you say that to all the other guests.
Yeah, I do say that to everybody. Hey, listen, do you have your eye on any theaters here in the US that you'd like to perform in when this whole thing is over?
I'd love to go and perform, but I loved performing at the UCB. That was really fun.
Oh, nice. In New York.
I did like a 5-minute open spot there back in the day, but no, I'm talking about the one in
LA.
You know, the, in LA.
Oh, yeah. Good. Yeah. Because I think the UCB in New York actually closed down. Did you hear that?
It did not really.
Yeah, it did. It went under.
I love that place.
I know. No, it was
amazing. Well, no wonder they were selling $2 beers. I mean, why would they, you know, that's really unfortunate.
Yeah, it's actually it was a big deal.
There should be some sort of, you know, it's just all, one day we're going to wake up and we're just going to look around and just realize that everything's a Shake Shack or a Sephora. Which one's not the beer? Sephora. Yeah. Or a Target and just be like, where did the art go?
Where did the culture go? What are we doing? Yeah. Yeah, I love like where I live here. I'm sure it's similar. Well, I don't know, but
do you live in Silver Lake?
I do. No? Yeah, and so
yeah, there we go. Nailed
lots
it.
And lots. Did the flannel give it away? Is it the flannel?
I don't know. It's just everyone cool lives in Silver Lake, so I take that as a compliment.
Yeah, but there's so many small little black box theaters, and we're really lucky. And the UCB is still open here. There's a huge one now on Sunset. Did you know that? There's one on Franklin was the original, and now there's a much bigger one.
Oh, okay. So I was talking about Sunset, but yeah, I love the one of Franklin as well.
Yeah, that's a cute little one, but there's a much bigger one. So hopefully we'll be back to normal.
Do you know the place I really like? I like that place called La Mille Coffee. Do you know that place?
La Mille. Huh.
M-A-L-A-M-I-L-L Coffee. I think it's like in It's opposite a place called Milk.
Oh yeah, that. down on it's either Beverly or Melrose.
Yeah, well, probably. I don't know. It's cute. I like that place to work. That's one of my favorites. Hangouts.
Yeah. Well, I'm telling you, I'm just so impressed with what you're doing. And pandemic or no pandemic, you can keep doing it because the scams are never going to end.
Yeah. Yeah, that's great. They just keep giving me material. I mean, I'm doing a lot of other things now, but you know, I can't help but reply if I get a funny one asking me how to solve the pandemic.
It's just great, and the rhythm of it is so it's so funny, and I'm just really excited about your whole act. So, you guys, find James Veitch over there on YouTube. He's got so much content; you could just watch it all day. It is nice now how, like, last night, my daughter and I were watching it on our regular TV screen. You know, you don't have to like just be in front of your tiny computer watching YouTube anymore. You could just watch it. It's television, is what it is. You know. So
the problem is you had to ask directions to that TV screen.
Well,
and
that's
that created a problem.
That's
because
true.
Obviously she was, yeah, you can. I like that. I'm doing a lot of stuff on YouTube now just because I've got time to kind of, I just make it and film it and edit it myself at home, and it's lovely.
Yeah. Well, it's just fabulous. Okay. You guys can also find him over at his website, veitch.me. So it's veitch.me. That's it. Wow. That's nice. That's clever. That's awesome. And you guys, don't forget that I have just started the Storyworthy Hour of Power every Sunday night. So let's see, James, if I had you on that show, 6 p.m. In LA, that's 2 a.m. to you though.
Yeah, I'd be shit-faced.
See?
I would definitely be drinking before that.
You'd be eight pints in. And
it only takes half a pint for me to get drunk, but yes.
All the pubs are closed over there now, or are they open?
I can't imagine them being open right now. I mean, I'm not much of a drinker. I haven't met anyone at the pub. So, but I assume they're still closed. Yeah.
Yeah.
We haven't been locked down.
Yeah. I'm telling you, this is all so odd, but because of this, I met you. So there you go. Hooray, COVID-19.
I'm not going to say that. I'm not going to repeat that. Okay.
All right, you guys. Listen, don't forget to tune into the Storyworthy Hour of Power. Like I said, you can find out the details at storyworthypodcast.com. All right, you guys. One more time on behalf of the very talented James Veitch. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right, you guys. My name is Christine Blackburn saying, make it a Storyworthy Week.
Thanks for joining us on the Storyworthy Podcast. We'll be back next week with all new stories. Subscribe to Storyworthy on iTunes and visit the Storyworthy website at storyworthypodcast.com.